Hello, and welcome to Ag Tech Talk, where we look at the agricultural advances shaping the future of the crop input industry. I'm your host, Dan Jacobs, Senior Editor with Agribusiness Global. Today, we're talking with Michael Cohen, CEO and founder of Spark AI, a company that, according to its website, makes it easy and radically cost-effective to inject augmented human cognition anywhere in your production AI workflow, instantly eliminating your barriers to progress. Yeah, I don't quite understand what that is either. Let's let our guest explain. Why don't you tell us just real quick what Spark AI is? Give me your elevator speech about what that's all about.
Yeah, Dan. So look, here's the specific problem we solve. And it really has to do with the reality of the world that we live in. The real world is unpredictable and complex. And as a result, it's really hard to build AI systems that work perfectly always. We come from the self-driving car industry where, look, you wouldn't get into a self-driving car that was 95% accurate. So for a lot of applications, and especially ones that are dealing with either things related to safety or productivity and output, really it's that last 5% that is the critical gap that's preventing these next generation applications from getting to market. And it's there because, again, AI systems work really, really well 95% of the time. But when they encounter something that they don't quite understand, things start to break down, and that impacts really the viability of the product. So that's the piece that we solve. We do that by leveraging technology and methodologies that we originally built when we were working on self-driving cars. And we do it in a particularly unique way by combining our own ML systems with input from real human beings. And we do that in real time. The result is that it helps our customers across a variety of applications launch and scale AI products faster than they ever thought possible and before their AI systems are perfect.
Okay. I guess if you could explain for me, forgive my ignorance here. You know, we have AI, artificial intelligence, you know, we've been hearing about that for a long time, and then automation, robotics, that kind of thing, which is kind of what you're marrying here, if I understand you. Can you explain how those are different and how they complement each other?
Sure. So look, I think when you're talking about robotics, typically what you're referring to is the you know, physical, mechanical machines, right? Whether they be autonomous mobile robots, an autonomous tractor, or picking robots, or goods to person robots like that, you know, ones that, you know, might be employed at a warehouse. What you're talking about are physical things that are interacting with the world in a physical way. Those robots, and especially the next generation of those robots, are leveraging AI, which itself is a fairly broad umbrella concept. But think of it as the body and the brain. So the robot is the body, the AI system is the brain. You need both of those in order to really deliver products that are, you know, that deliver on the value that they're trying to deliver. Automation, you know, I think, again, is another one of these fairly broad umbrella terms that, I mean, depending on how you want to define this, probably encapsulates AI and robotics into this concept of automation. But that's how the distinction lines up.
Okay. So you mentioned, you know, automobiles. You know, we've been hearing about self-driving autos, but we also hear about accidents and things like that. And I think that's kind of what you referenced when you mentioned those 5%. I think on your website, you call them edge cases.
Sure.
Can you talk a little bit more about, you know, how that, the, you know, are we going to get to the point? Well, let's talk about the edge cases first. Talk to me about what those are. What does that mean?
Sure. Well, look, so the thing is, we humans take this for granted, but when you walk down the street, think of it like a busy city in the, you know, busy San Francisco city, you are constantly observing the environment and adapting to some of the crazy things that you sometimes might be encountering for the first time. Again, we humans really get to take advantage of the decades of life experience that we have, but also millions of years of human evolution that equip us incredibly well to adapt to changing situations in the world very quickly based on mental models that, again, leverage our past life experience and our past evolutionary experience. When you think about that, so that concept just doesn't exist for AI today. The way we build AI is, you know, we have some base model and we pummel it with what's called training data. So as much as many examples, if you will, of particular things that we expect that model to encounter. But there's only so much of that data available in the world, and there's only so much of that that an AI system can confidently ingest and really start building a quote unquote mental model around. So what happens is most AI teams are able to do that really, really well and get to the performance of, let's say, 95 or 96%. The challenge is that last 5% represents what are called long tail edge cases or long tail exceptions. What it's referring to is all those situations, the long tail of situations that might exist in the world that you can't predict and you cannot train for, and you can't really build a big repository of training data because they're rare. They're rare on an individual basis, but in aggregate, they represent meaningful percentage of the problem. So again, 95% of the time, your self-driving car might be working perfectly, but in that, there's 5% of the time when the world looks slightly different, if that system can't adapt, you've got a real dangerous situation on your hands.
So your solution is to bring in that human factor back into the automation. Can you talk a little bit about how that works? Because if you still have to rely on humans, if a grower has his sprayer out there, whatever tool he's using on the field, if he can do it with AI, he can do it in the middle of the night, right? So, yeah. If it works that way, so how does bringing humans back into this really work? If you still, does that sort of defeat the purpose of relying on artificial intelligence?
Not so much. We really view what we're doing here as a cornerstone of the AI revolution. What I mean by that is, look, this is going to take a few decades to get right, getting these AI systems to perform perfectly well on their own, always. This is a story that unfolds over decades. When you think about the applications in agriculture specifically, growers have been depending on a particular way of doing things for centuries. And now you have new technology that's coming in. And sure, if it works well most of the time, great. But if you turn, whatever machine you have running, turn it on in the middle of the night and it does something wrong, right, and destroys your field or impacts you in some negative way, you really can't rely on that product anymore. So it's really not about dampening our ability to launch and scale AI products. It's really more about how do we take the systems that we as an industry have built today and give growers the confidence that these systems will run extremely well and reliably all the time. And part of that is helping AI system bridge this human, this cognitive gap that today only humans have. In a lot of ways, really, it gives people the confidence to say, this is something that I can rely on to really do the thing that I'm handing off to do.
Okay, so maybe now is a good time for a specific example. So yeah. give me if you can, something in that 4 to 5% that is not that the artificial intelligence isn't going to be able to figure out on its own and needs some sort of input, outside input to figure out.
Sure. Yeah. I think we're fairly public about our relationship with John Deere, which is just an incredible, incredible company. I mean, you look at some of the headlines that are coming out around some of the work that they've been doing over the past number of years to really introduce automation into the solutions that they deliver for their end customers. And it's really one of the most important automation companies, I think, in existence today that's really delivering on the promise of automation and delivering on the value there. So one of the use cases that we've been working closely with them on is this autonomous tractor. And again, here you have a system that involves a fairly large piece of equipment that's out there, navigating the world on its own. As many of the folks listening in on this podcast know, a farm field is actually a fairly unstructured environment. The word unstructured there really means unpredictable and potentially complex. More often than not, sure, row crops, but every so often you have a shopping cart in the middle of the field, and you need to be able to handle that. Safely and confidently in a way that doesn't impact performance. So the way we interface with a product like that is in those moments where the system might encounter something that it's not quite sure what it is, instead of just stopping and waiting for the farmer to come and help, it'll call our system automatically. We'll get data from the robots. We'll see kind of through the eyes of the robot and provide, and real human beings that were trained for the use case, look at that data and are able to provide a kind of a cognitive common sense human input. That input goes directly back to the robot, which then uses it to make a safe and confident decision in the field. So it'll, in that case, let's say it'll help provide a, help it classify that obstacle in a particular way. With that input, again, the robot can make a safe and confident decision. And everything I just talked about happens in a matter of seconds. So really seamless in terms of the functioning of the robot itself.
It would seem to me that obviously the more products you sell, I mean, the more times you that this Spark AI solution is implemented out in the field, you know, obviously you're going to have, you know, more and more people available to answer these issues. Am I assessing that correctly?
Well, so this is what makes this difficult. And this is where the technology layer comes in. Cause sure. I mean, the brute force way is, yeah, you just hire this massive sea of people that are always available to respond within seconds. But the real magic of what we've developed here, and again, it's built out of the tech that we built in self-driving cars, is the ability to do more with less and have a smaller human footprint that doesn't need to scale linearly with the number of deployments that we might have with a customer or customers, and help enable the humans to do a faster, more accurate job through technology. So there's job and routing systems, real-time decision tools that enable, again, the human to do a faster job, real-time QA systems that ensure the job they're doing is accurate. All that comes together to really deliver that same job with as few people as possible.
Okay. Speaking as a few people as possible, one of the regular complaints or concerns we hear from growers is, labor issues, you know, trying to find people on the farm. So obviously, you know, automated or, you know, a artificial intelligence solution would seem to be, a possible mitigating circumstance. You know, something to make that issue a little less concerning. But are there things that are, you know, other things that may be preventing people from adopting this kind of technology?
Yeah. Well, so let's kind of take a step back and talk about the backdrop here. Really over the past number of decades, and I'm sure many of the folks listening to this podcast, you know, probably shaking their heads in the background or nodding their heads in the background, just increasing pressure on growers to produce, right? And that pressure is coming from a lot of different directions all at once. Increasing population that's more developed and consuming more, pressure from climate, from soil conditions, from weather, and from labor, right? The shortages in labor and the ability to really meet supply and demand. So all of that pressure is really fueling this interest and desire to think about how to solve parts of that puzzle with automation. So the interest is there. The question then becomes, how reliable is that automation today? And, you know, we humans are incredibly forgiving of other humans making errors or making mistakes. But as soon as you take a, supposedly intelligent AI system and say, hey, you should trust this, that AI system makes a silly error, it really degrades your confidence in that product and, you know, ability for you to really trust it. So I think there's a few dynamics, right? One is that are potentially impacting adoption of robotics and AI in the field. One is that overall performance and reliability factor. Another is some of those applications haven't really been perfected yet from just purely a mechanical standpoint. You know, getting articulating robots to pick every single strawberry in a row really well is actually a particularly hard physics challenge. And the third kind of interesting piece, and I think this is just a unique factor, a unique facet of agriculture, is, you know, some people go into agriculture because they want to be outdoors and, you know, they want to work with their hands and they want to be part of, just part of the act of growing. So finding that right balance of how to enable people to continue to do that while enabling them to answer this call and pressure from like the need to be more and more productive, you know, it's a balance that I think we as an industry are still trying to find together.
You mentioned you work with John Deere. I guess my question before I even jump into the question I have on my sheet here is, how does it physically work? I mean, you know, you have a John Deere tractor or you know machine. Is it a software solution that's embedded? Is there a box that's sitting, you know, on you know somewhere on the dashboard that works within? I mean, how what's the mechanics that actually says, you know, here's the thing that has the AI sort of embedded in it?
Yeah, so this is the beautiful part. We really interface kind of at the decision layer. So there's no physical hardware that we're introducing. Everything we've talked about packages into what's called an API, which is just a way for two software systems to communicate with each other. So with all of our customers, they have a robotic system. That system has onboard intelligence. And it knows when it's not confident in a decision. So when it knows that it's not confident, it'll call our system automatically, kind of a software to software interface. And then we do our thing in the background and then deliver a response again, all via software. So allows us to interface with a variety of different types of robotic systems and customers.
Okay. I mean, so you mentioned John Deere, but you could really work with any system.
Yeah, absolutely. So we work with a variety of applications within agriculture, but also outside of agriculture, you know, insurance tech, logistics and warehouse, you know, drone inspection. Those are all kind of areas that we spend a lot of time in.
I know, you know, one thing that we've heard a lot about recently is data, you know, companies collecting data, whether it's, you know, to use that to, you know, improve things on the farm. Are you, I mean, obviously you're collecting scenarios, I guess, I don't, for lack of a better term, you know, and to learn so that you can help the AI continue to learn. But are you collecting, you know, other types of data, on farm data? And if so, you know, how do you make sure that, you know, you're not breaking anybody's, you're not giving away any information that a grower yeah. or, you know, doesn't want to be out there?
Yeah. So look, we're there to help our customers deliver a better product to their customers. So in terms of that data relationship, that's kind of managed between our customer and their end customer. We don't own any of that data. We're kind of really there just to service our end customers. So really, you know, we leave that to them to manage, and we're just a supporter of that.
So like a grower will be the end user but your customer is really more like the John Deere's and the, you know, the manufacturers of the world.
Right. We're our customer is whoever is responsible for the performance of that system.
Okay. So again, here's that I don't know if it's a softball question or a really hard one. You'll have to let me know. But we've been talking about, we've been hearing about technology and how it's going to change the world. Maybe I've watched the Jetsons cartoon way too many times or something. We're supposed to have flying cars by now. So the promise of these solutions seems to outpace the reality of them. You mentioned it might take decades. I mean, where are we going to be 5 years from 10 years from now? Are you still going to have that human connection to your AI, or was it going to be completely, automated?
Yeah, look, the reality here is this is a story that plays out over decades. And I think what the industry is starting to awaken to is this idea that AI is hard to perfect, and it's hard to make reliable and work perfectly, you know, as I mentioned, in every single possible scenario. So what you're hearing from, you know, the senior most AI practitioners and thought leaders out there is this increasing theme that the pace of development that we're on is great, but there's this other track that is as of yet undiscovered that, you know, we as an industry need to figure out. But the running theme is that other path needs to start looking a lot more like human cognition, right? Not that I'm saying human cognition needs to be part of this forever and ever, right? but that the way we build AI systems need to start taking some more cues from how human cognitive systems work. And we need to start figuring out a way to build in that common sense reasoning into how we build AI systems, which again is really a to be discovered track in AI. I think there's probably a Nobel Prize or two in that story. And again, that'll you know, it's kind of these once in a decade innovations that'll take place.
Are we closer to a fully autonomous car or a fully autonomous tractor?
Fully autonomous tractor.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the most beautiful things about agriculture, where you're going to start seeing a lot more large scale autonomous systems, and not just robots, but also just reliance on AI in a farm setting. You're going to see that a lot sooner than in an urban environment. So really, I firmly believe this, the AI revolution starts on the farm.
Okay. We kind of talked a little bit about this earlier, but and you kind of mentioned in passing, like a grocery cart in the middle of the farm, you know, in the field somewhere. Sure. Can you maybe give me a very specific example of or two of an edge case that your system has had to solve?
Sure. So the way you can think about edge cases are really just let's broaden it, exceptions. There's two ways to think about it. Either it's something completely unique that you could never have predicted and is totally new to the system, or it's something totally mundane, but for whatever reason in that moment looks unique.
Mm-hmm.
So that's maybe the easier one to talk about. Think about a log in the middle of a field, or a boulder or a bush on the edge of a field. For whatever reason, there are times where that bush, because of how the sun is oriented, and let's say it's a particularly dusty day, for whatever reason, that combination of environmental factors makes that bush look like something completely different. For those of you that drive Teslas and are brave enough to turn autopilot on, you'll see these things happening every so often where a car is identified as a truck or a person is identified as a bicyclist. So that's the same that happens really anywhere an AI system is deployed, where for some reason in the moment, that thing looks different. And the AI system is intelligent enough to say, hey, this is weird. And I'm also not confident about how weird that is. So really, again, a very specific example I can give you is just going to sound so mundane. A bush at the edge of a field that looks like something else. Again, because of some environmental condition.
Okay, fair enough. What else do we need to know?
Sure. Look, I think, again, just echoing what I was mentioning earlier, I truly do believe that the AI revolution starts on the farm. And there's a tremendous amount of promise to meet a very specific need on a human level, right? Helping feed the world. And there's ways to do that through robotics. And there's ways to do this through some of the other really exciting AI systems that are being introduced, you know, over the past few years and into the future around using AI to better manage crops, crop yield, pest detection, crop health monitoring, soil monitoring. Some of those systems, again, are fairly simple. They're just, you know, a system that sits in the field and is just breathing the air and producing results on that. Others involve drones that are doing some inspection on crops and trying to identify, you know, evidence of certain pest or crop health issues. So there's a lot happening across agriculture. The linchpin of all of this is how reliable can you make it? How much can you get farmers to trust the output of these systems that are feeding all this data back? And then also, how do you package this data in a way that actually allows the farmer to take action? So, you know, if you know one corner of the field is you know, affected by fall armyworm, how can the farmer then go take action on just that corner of the field if, you know, their watering system is the entire row? So there's a lot of this kind of symbiosis that needs to happen. But I think it starts with developing, you know, better, more reliable systems that really prove the ROI case to farmers, increase adoption. And then through that, you know, there's kind of, again, like an ongoing evolutionary co-development that happens over time.
We talked a little bit earlier about this being, you know, our focus is on the crop input. So how do you see that artificial intelligence tool, that piece of it affecting the crop inputs, you know, down the road here?
Yeah, I think it comes down to really optimizing. And you see some of this both with robotic systems and non-robotic systems. But some of the running themes are how do you get more yield out of your crops with greater efficiency. So that's less, you know, less fertilizer, pesticides, you know, optimized water usage. These are things that I think are important to the downstream, you know, overall cost of managing a farm, increasing the output and yield of your farm, but also, you know, have implications to just a healthy climate and a healthy environment. So, yeah, I think, you know, there's a lot of work to be done there. And I think the better that data becomes, the better it's, you know, the more digestible it's presented to farmers, the better, more decisive actions that can be taken.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your time. If somebody wanted to learn more about Spark AI and the solutions you offer, how do they find out about that?
Absolutely. They can find us at www.spark.ai. And all the information's up there. And we talk a lot about various use cases in agriculture, as well as a handful of thought pieces that really, you know, start to talk about what it's going to take to introduce these next generation products to market, not 5 years from now or 10 years from now, but right now, today, when the world needs the most.
Terrific. Well, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate your insights today.
Absolutely. Really a pleasure to be here.
Thanks for listening. Join us next month for Ag Tech Talk, when we'll talk with another expert improving the crop input industry through technology.